Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and here with me today is Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Logan. You know, it's great to be back from the hiatus as we keep getting closer to the start of the season.
How's Raleigh treating you?
You know, I've really enjoyed it. It's been a bit of a change. I really enjoy it. It's got this great feel of the convenience of a big city, but the quaintness and the down home of a small town, and it's been great. It's been great to be back really deep in ACC country, so I don't have to listen to sports radio go on and on and on and on and on about the SEC, which is always a positive thing.
That's not something I'm familiar with at all. I got to imagine. I'm kind of curious to see how the mood will turn in that area once NC State starts playing football, but...
Well, the thing about being up here is being in the triangle is you've got NC State and then you've got North Carolina and Duke roughly 20 minutes away. So, I mean, there's a huge just grouping of ACC fans and North Carolina fans. And, you know, it's really great. It gives you a lot more people to talk about, a lot, in my opinion, less biased attitudes towards the game because you don't have as many people up here that are sipping on that SEC Kool-Aid.
I think that can be pretty fair. I also, no offense to all the campuses down south, but every campus I visit in North Carolina is just beautiful. I'm not sure if it's the same at NC State, but UNC or Duke are some of my favorite places to visit.
Yeah, I mean, they're beautiful campuses. You know, North Carolina's really got that college feel to it, and it's a very clean little town. And Durham's a little bit bigger with some more convenience, and you know it's great. The ACC baseball tournament's usually up here at Bulls Park in Durham, which I went this year, and that was a lot of fun. You know, I actually haven't spent a lot of time on State's campus. I've driven around it. It's less than a mile from where I live. I just have never really had a need to be over there.
Okay, well, hopefully that doesn't say too much about the campus, but regardless. As all our listeners out there may have been getting a hint at, we're going to be talking about the ACC this week. We're going to get our projections for every team in the SEC. Or, sorry. God, I'm falling back to the Southern bias. Every team...
Can't get away from it, no matter how hard I try.
We're going to give a projection for every team in the ACC, what their records will be, and who the champion will turn out to be, and some of our All-Americans. So... To start off, Andrew, I'll go ahead and pick a team that'll appease Elizabeth. Let's just go ahead and start about UNC. Now, we talked a little bit beforehand. I know UNC is probably your favorite pick to win the Coastal.
Yeah, you know, you always talk about if you want to be the best, you've got to beat the best. And Carolina put together a great season last year, marred a little bit by the bowl game against Baylor, where their defense, you know, is, I believe Nick Saban talked about it. They got ran through like shit through a wire mesh. Well, you know, and just gave up quite a bit of yards to really beat up Baylor offense, but. Yeah, the big thing about Carolina is most of their offensive weapons return. They only lose one offensive lineman. They are going to have a change at quarterback, but Trubisky's played a good bit for him and I think might be a better quarterback than Marquise Williams, who is really more of a great athlete with a good arm who could make some maxes with his feet. I'm not sure if Trubisky's going to be that same dynamic guy with the ball in his hands, but he might be better at making the reads and putting the ball where he needs to put it. You know, they've returned a great set of wide receivers in Matt Collins, Buck Howard, and, you know, special teams All-American Ryan Switzer. You know, Elijah Hood comes back, who was a fantastic running back for them last year. They've got some depth there. You know, the defense is really going to be the question after the laying the egg against Baylor. And then they've got to replace all the linebackers. In a defense, so that's where your questions are really going to be, is year two of the Gene Chizik era, is DC going to make the changes necessary to where they're not having to score 30, 40 points a game to win? Are they not having, like against Georgia Tech last year, where they're down 21 and having to fight back?
Yeah, where you have to build off that momentum. And... like you said, a lot of the times last year it all just fell on the offense, and it's a hard thing to do when it all comes back to you at quarterback or at running back. personally, I feel like they didn't run Elijah Hood enough last year, but, you know, they've got, like we talked about, those are some great weapons they've got. It's just we don't know about the defense. And they also, like you said, the egg they laid against Baylor and the fact that they're losing most of their linebackers is really scary, especially when you play a team like Georgia at the beginning of the year, where you assume if Kirby Smart knows what he's doing, he's just going to give the ball to Nick Chubb over and over and over again and run right at him.
Yeah, I mean, that's really going to be much kind of like last year. It's that first game is going to be where you really kind of see what North Carolina is. Now, last year was a bit of a misnomer because they made a lot of mistakes and lost to what was really a poor South Carolina team. Now, you know, Georgia's going to be a huge fight. It's down in Atlanta. It's in the Georgia Dome, which for all intents and purposes is going to be a Georgia home game. It's going to be red and black. There's going to be barking. It's going to be loud. You know, it's a tough road start for a quarterback in his first full season as the starter. But, you know, I think if they can come out and do what they need to do on offense and then show some adjustments and some growth on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, I think they've got a chance to win that game. I think they're getting written off a little too quickly.
Well, it's a tough one for me to call. I really want to root for him, but it's hard to say going against what we've seen Nick Chubb do. I think the three big games that I see on their schedule are obviously that start-off game at, I'm going to go ahead and say at Georgia. Technically, it's at the Georgia Dome, but it's at Georgia, like you said. At Florida State, and then at Miami. So they're all road games that take them really far south against teams that are pretty talented, especially on offense. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think at the end of the year, they're probably going to do better than my projection, but I'm going to give them a solid 9-3 record just because I'm really looking at those games. I'm like, I don't know enough about UNC right now to say that they're going to win those games, but I think down the road they could prove themselves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to be tough adding Florida State to the schedule instead of who they had to play last year, because, you know, I mean, obviously when you bring in Florida State and you drop Wake Forest, you know, it's going to be a tougher game. No offense to any of our Wake Forest fans we might have out there. You know, and being in Doak Campbell, especially with a Florida State team that many are picking to knock Clemson off and win the conference, that's going to be a rough game. Like you said, the Miami game I think will be a tough one. You know, they get Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, and Pittsburgh all in Chapel Hill, so that's going to be helpful to them because those are some of the other strong teams on the coastal side of it. They do have to travel to Duke and to Virginia, which really aren't big questions. I mean, their non-conference schedule outside of Georgia's Illinois, James Madison, and the Citadel. They're again playing two FCS programs. I think it's the same issue where they had another game scheduled and a team backed out on them, so they had to find a late replacement. They should at worst go 3-1 non-conference. Best obviously would be to knock Georgia off and go 4-0. You know, I think you're 9-3, 9-4 is probably a good record for them. You know, I think I agree with you where we saw what we saw last year, and it's going to be, can they carry over and can they fix the mistakes and the issues they had at the end of the season?
Well, we'll see as the season progresses. Let's move on to another team, a coach I was hoping we would never have to play again, Miami. So Miami has got Brad Kaya coming back. He's a quarterback that's never really impressed me, but I've heard a lot of talk about how Mark Richt would be the kind of coach that could really develop a player like that. And honestly, he's been a great coach, and I think he fits Miami very well. Other than Brad Kaya, they've got five starters returning at O-line, which is great. But on defense, they lose a ton. They basically lose their whole secondary. Tracy Howard, Artie Burns, gone at corner. And their safety, Deion Bush and Dallas Crawford, are just gone as well. So it's kind of a 50-50 thing. You've got a lot of weapons on offense, but again, you've lost so much on the defense, you wonder, are you going to be able to stop anyone?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I've liked Brad Kaya. I've really been impressed. I think he's probably number two in my mind behind Deshaun Watson right now in terms of quarterbacks going into the season, proven players. You know, Miami's always going to have weapons. Miami's always going to have talent. They've always recruited fairly well. You know, they've got a great fertile recruiting grounds down there in South Florida. They're always going to be fast. They're always going to fly around. And I think Mark Richt was a great hire for them. I think that he's going to bring back some of the ideas of what they can do. You know, we saw what he could do at Georgia. You know, so he's a great offensive mind. He's put together a pretty good staff down there. And I think that they've got a chance. You know, them in North Carolina, like I said, are really the two, in my mind, they're going to be fighting it out to win the Coastal. You know, they return a ton of guys on offense, which is always going to be helpful. I think we kind of saw later in the year some of the decent sides of the Miami team. Now, you know, the blowout loss at North Carolina wasn't good, and then, you know, the close loss in the bowl game. Obviously, the big game that everyone points to is that just absolute shellacking that Clemson gave them. But they drop Clemson and pick up NC State, and no one's really talking about NC State being a great program this year. So I think that's something that's going to help them out, is their schedule's going to soften a little bit on the other side. They get Florida State in Miami, which is going to help them. You know, but like you said, defense is going to always be the question, and it's going to be, you know, can they rebound from the losses they had on defense and what they're able to do?
Yeah, I'm just not sure. I'm looking at this schedule, and I think you're right, it does soften a bit from last year, but you've still got a lot of road games that you got to be pretty worried about. You've got at Georgia Tech, which is always interesting. Luckily, they get off a bye week going into that, so they can prep. And, of course, you look at the first three games are basically nobody, so they're going to start off 3-0 and have plenty of time to prep for that game. But then you go Florida State, North Carolina, at Virginia Tech, at Notre Dame, and then Pitt. And I know Pitt, in your mind, is a dark horse, but Las Vegas has given them the best odds to win the Coastal. So Pitt's no pushover. And also, you're looking at some teams at the end of their with Duke, who are kind of looking for vengeance after what happened last year against Miami. So you're looking at a new coach, clearly not a coach who's lacking for talent, but going into a very tough schedule. I'm going to say, I really want to say 7-5. I'm going to give them 8-4. I'm mainly saying 7-5 just because I don't like Mark Richt, but honestly, I think they're probably going to go 8-4. Like you said, they're going to be one of the top teams in the Coastal. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, you know, it's especially because it's interesting to see if Mark Richt calls his own plays or if he, because when he first got to Georgia, he was also the offensive coordinator, and that was some of their better years as a program. So it'd be interesting to see if he still kind of calls the plays and does a lot more hands-on offensive planning than I think he did towards the end of his career at Georgia. You know, they hired Manny Diaz as a defensive coordinator who's really had some ups and some downs. He had some good years at Mississippi State. He had some really bad years at Texas, and then a pretty decent year at Mississippi State again. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he can really take that talented defense and get a lot out of it. You know, I kind of agree with you. You know, I think the Notre Dame game in Notre Dame is going to be tough. You know, it's always interesting to see the Catholics versus convicts games to see how those turn out. Though I think we've really gotten away from that version of Miami, so I don't know if we can really call it that anymore. You know, the Florida State game is going to be tough. You know, it's crazy that they open their ACC season in Atlanta against Georgia Tech with Mark Richt at the helm. You know, I mean, you talk about the ACC office prepping up something to create stories. I mean, there it is right there.
Yeah, well, I talked with Tommy about this last week, and I was looking for games I could really get excited about after the first week, because the first week's just going to be so full of intense games. That's actually a game I'm kind of hyped for, you know? Honestly, it worries me because, like I said, Miami basically gets four bye weeks coming into Georgia Tech. But I think with with our history with Mark Richt, I'm ready. There's a lot of teams on this schedule that are going to be like that, though. They're going to be out to get Miami.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's going to be. I think that Richt will have some level of success. Like I said, I think they're an 8-4. You know, possibly a 9-3 season. I think the Florida State game is probably a loss. The Notre Dame game, you know, is really kind of a toss-up. And then, like I said, I mean, that's the great thing about the Coastal is there's a level of parity and shakeup in the Coastal that you really can't count anyone out going into the season.
By parity and shakeup, you mean there's going to be some stupid bullshit that happens, like Virginia miraculously goes 8-4 and wins the damn conference. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. Anyway, moving along, let's go over to Virginia Tech, who's got one of my favorite games of the year. They're playing at Charlotte against Tennessee, which will be really interesting.
They're playing at Bristol against Tennessee.
My bad. It's a racing stadium. I don't remember. Bristol. Underneath the mega tube, the 400-ton mega big screen TV.
Yeah, and apparently, I mean, it's a sold-out, like, almost 200,000 people are going to be there. It's going to shatter every single college football attendance record on the books.
That just blows my mind.
You know, the thing about Virginia Tech is I think the biggest thing they did this year was being able to keep Bud Foster as the defensive coordinator, because it really means that even though they're bringing in a new staff and they're bringing in new coaches, the defense is going to really be able to stick to a lot of the scheme that they've been running and the guys they've been playing and the guys they've been recruiting. Now, they lost a ton, especially up front. They returned their entire secondary, so that'll really be interesting to see how well they play in terms of that. You know, their front has always been really strong, but it's always been a hallmark of some of the Virginia Tech defenses, is that blue-collar, lunch-pail front four that has always been able to press the pocket and get pressure and disrupt the run. So it'll be interesting to see with some new guys in how that's able to happen. And then on the offensive side of the ball, you know, they return a lot. They return 8 starters on offense. The majority of their skill players, you know, they're going to replace the quarterback. They signed a kid, Gerard Evans, out of the JUCO level, who was the number one dual-threat JUCO quarterback. You know, and obviously we saw what Fuente did with Paxton Lynch. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can finally find a quarterback, because they've really kind of, since Sean Glennon was there, been trying to find a guy that fit what they wanted to do and could do, you know, that's kind of hampered them the past year or so, and then they've got to stay healthy. You know, I mean, Virginia Tech's had an injury bug the past 2 seasons that have really knocked them out of any kind of contention for stuff. And I think if they can stay healthy, you know, that quarterback comes in like we expect him to, you know, the defense doesn't miss a beat. You know, they're another team that, you know, like I said, with the parity of the Coastal, have a chance to really compete for the Coastal. Because, I mean, their crossover games are Syracuse and Boston College, which, again, no offense to any of our Syracuse or Boston College fans out there, aren't exactly picked at the top end of the Atlantic. So that's really going to help them out in terms of that. Now, they open with Liberty, the big game against Tennessee, which will really be their first big test as to whether or not they're what we thought they could be, or they're going to have a rough year under a new coaching staff. You know, they do have to play at Notre Dame, which is always going to be a tough game. Notre Dame's going to be a really good team this year, much like they were last year. But other than that, I mean, they've got manageable. They're at Pittsburgh and at Duke, and at North Carolina game early in the season, I think, will be another one that'll really kind of start to shake out who really can step up and be in the driver's seat for the Coastal early.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't think I'm as optimistic as you are about how they'll turn out. I mean, obviously, if you look at the start of their season, I think they could easily go 3-1. But then they've got a tough road after they play Syracuse. I think they'd lose to North Carolina. And then you got Miami, at Pitt, at Duke, Georgia Tech, at Notre Dame. And maybe this is just my Tech bias, but I think some of the wins don't go their way. I mean, Georgia Tech, not Virginia Tech. So I could see them going 7-5, but I wrote them as 6-6. So I don't know what your view on the matter is.
You know, like I said, it's really going to be if the defense doesn't miss a beat, if they stay healthy, and if Gerard Evans is the answer at quarterback. If the stars align and they play well, I could see 9-3 or 8-4. If they get the injury bug again, if they don't adjust as well on offense, if Evans isn't what he's expected to be, you know, I could very well see a 7-5 and 6-6 season that's just kind of, all right, here we are again.
On our own, going down the only road Justin Fuente has ever known. But no, I think Justin Fuente, though, was a great pick for that program, and they've only got positive things from here on. But I just don't see this first starting year, like for many coaches, going quite as well as they would maybe expect. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the biggest thing that Fuente did was he convinced Bug Foster to stay.
That's absolutely right. The defensive coordinator is the important thing at Virginia Tech.
I mean, he really is. I mean, you look at what he's done in his career there, he's easily one of the top minds in the game.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that's really what kept them in a lot of their games. But we're going to move on now. Talk about, again, the team that Vegas is picking as the most likely to win the Coastal. Not the most likely to win the ACC Championship out of the Coastal, but the most likely to win the ACC Coastal, and that would be Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh, honestly, after what they did last year, which was kind of a record setting for wins, it was their first time they've had that many wins since 2010, so that's been 5 years. They're looking pretty good. They've got James Conner returning from cancer, so I don't know how great he's going to be, but their O-line is returning. Nate Peterman's at quarterback, and of course, like we were talking about, Vegas has a very high view of them. I think you've got them stanced as a dark horse, though. What's your opinion on Pitt? Obviously, something stands out to you as being a negative.
You know, I think they are. It's going to be interesting with Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator, who kind of got ran out of NC State a couple years ago. You know, they bring a lot of weapons. You know, the big loss, obviously, being Tyler Boyd, the wide receiver who owns pretty much every Pitt receiving record in the book. You know, I think Peterman really kind of settled into his game a little bit later in the season. He started to pick out his weapons. And then, you know, obviously with James Conner coming back from the cancer, what level is he going to be? How much is he going to be able to contribute? But even with that, the guys they had that ran behind him, you know, Quadre Allison, Raheem Ibrahim, Darren Hall, I mean, a pretty good stable of solid running backs that if Conner isn't full or 100%, we'll be able to pick up some of the slack. You know, they won a lot of close games last year, a last-second field goal to beat Georgia Tech. You know, they beat Virginia Tech by 6, a missed field goal in overtime, lost to Iowa. You know, I mean, they've got a chance to be really good. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what that defense does in the second season of Pat Narduzzi. They bring 8 guys back that were starters, which is always going to be helpful on the defensive side of the ball. You know, their schedule – they get Penn State the second week, then at Oklahoma State and at North Carolina 2 weeks back-to-back. It's going to be a rough one.
Which, by the way, at Oklahoma State is such a weird scheduling thing to me. I'm looking at that game, I'm like, I know we're talking about all the players and everything, but I really don't know a lot about Pitt going into this year because last year threw me so much. And I really don't know much about Oklahoma State either because they looked really good at the beginning of last year and then just kind of fell apart. So I don't know what to expect out of that game.
Yeah, that'll definitely be one that'll kind of set you to what are we going to be able to see from this Pittsburgh squad. You know, then the North Carolina game the week after is going to be a big one. You know, their crossover games, they have to go to Clemson, which is going to be tough, and it's going to hurt them. You know, then their other crossover is Syracuse, which – again, my apologies, Syracuse fans, not picked to be great. You know, but I'd see him, you know, again, if it's one of those where much like every other team in the Coastal, if everything falls together, they could be 9-3, 8-4 and win the division, or they could be 6-6, middle of the pack.
I'm going to
– really kind of what it matters.
I'm going to give Pitt 7-5. I'm going to say they're like Nigel. They're a bunch of leg day skipping guys. They look really buff, you know. It looks really great to Vegas. Oh, look, they've got all this talent. But at the end of the day, they just don't have the depth to back it up, you know. I think 7-5 is pretty reasonable. And like you said, they could do better if the coin flips their way, such as the way the ACC works. But I think 7-5 is pretty reasonable for this team, what I've seen this offseason. All right, let's move on to both of our favorite team, Georgia Tech. I'm just gonna let you talk, Andrew, because I think you can cover them much more in depth than I can. Honestly, I think we both know a fair bit, but again, you're big pals with PJ, so go ahead.
You know, I think a lot of people expected Georgia Tech to take a step back last year. You know, you had a great season the year before. You won 11 games. everything kind of fell out together. You had a very opportunistic defense that forced a lot of takeaways and was able to either capitalize them on themselves, or the offense was able to capitalize, you know. And so you expected some level of regression last year. I don't think anyone foresaw the wheels falling off the way they did. You know, you had the injury bug that decimated an already light running back core. You know, you had the guys you expected to play a lot got injured early, so you were playing a lot of freshmen. You were playing at one time a walk-on or two. You know, the depth there just killed you. And then the biggest part to me that is really the crux of any question about Georgia Tech this year is, what are you going to get from the offensive line? If you get an offensive line that's come together and has learned and is able to make plays and, you know, slip to the second level, get the hats on the linebackers, make the right calls, and do what you're supposed to do, I could see, again, because it's the Coastal, I could see Georgia Tech on some level competing for the Coastal. If you don't have a lot of growth and you have the same issues and mistakes last year, you know, you don't want to pick them to have the wheels fall off again, but it's possible. You know, I don't see worse than a 6-6 season, but I didn't see worse than a 6-6 season last year. You know, obviously with Justin Thomas, he's going to be able to make plays, but Thomas is a much better player like he was 2 years ago, where he didn't have to try to win it on his own. And I think that's one of the things that hurt him a lot last year, is with a poor offensive line, with poor skill position, young skill position players, a lot more was in his hands trying to make the plays on his own. And that's really not the way the offense is designed to work. I think, you know, with guys like Marcus Marshall, with another year coming to be back, I think he's going to be a good weapon. He's got good feet. He's a lot faster than you think he would be. He's just got to be able to protect the football, and he's got to be able to sell when he doesn't get the football. You know, we saw a great spring out of Dedrick Mills, the freshman out of Waycross. Whether or not he plays is a lot going to be based upon what C.J. Leggett does, how he comes back from his injury last year. What do we expect out of Quade Weimerskirch? You know, we should have some depth at the B-back level, that, as well as you expect a lot more production. You know, I think last year we kind of went in with Patrick Scove, who really wasn't what you wanted as a game-breaker at B-back, and I think Marshall has a chance to be that type player. You know, A-back's going to be a huge question. You're going to get Quay Searcy back from injury. You know, Clinton Lynch came on and had a fairly productive year, all things considered. You know, the big question is going to be, again, how well do they learn the perimeter blocking? How well do they learn making the right calls? You know, that's going to be a huge part of what they can do. At wide receiver, you know, Ricky June kind of stepped up last year and really became your go-to guy for Justin Thomas. You're hoping another offseason of those two, another offseason of 7-on-7 work, that Justin can start to trust him, kind of like you saw with Justin and Smelter. You know, Brad Stewart's going to be on the other side. Stewart played well as a freshman last year. You know, everyone's going to remember his catch against Florida State that really helped us out. But, you know, wide receivers, a lot of it's make and break based upon how well they can block on the perimeter, how well they can switch off to the safety, and then how well they play one-on-one.
Okay, you know, okay. Andrew, we could both talk Georgia Tech all day. But we do have other teams to cover. I'm going to go ahead and say 8-4. My reasoning for that is Georgia Tech has bucked the trend every year, and I have looked over this schedule pretty thoroughly. They do have some tough games early on, but I think if they can get through them, they can really surprise some people later in the year. I'm going to say 8-4. You're probably right. They're probably going to end up closer to middle of the road than that, but I like to be optimistic.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's really going to be the defensive line and then the front four. The front four has made strides and can get pressure, and the offensive line plays more like the two-year-ago offensive line and not last year's. And, yeah, I definitely see Georgia Tech 9-3, 8-4 with a chance of winning the Coastal. If not, you don't want to say it's going to be worse than 6-6, but we saw last year that sometimes the wheels just fall off.
Yeah, sometimes just things don't go the way you plan. And at Georgia Tech, that happens a lot. Sometimes it's a good thing, though, because I think 2 years ago we weren't expecting to win the Orange Bowl. But, hey, we'll see how it turns out. Moving on, we got Duke with David Cutcliffe. I think the biggest note I had on that was they returned their running back and they lose – their D-line and their O-line, essentially. They do have what I would say is an easier schedule, especially at the beginning of the year. But then they also have to play at Notre Dame, at Louisville, at Georgia Tech on homecoming, at Pittsburgh, at Miami, and, of course, UNC. So a lot of games where you're kind of like, I'm not as comfortable with those.
Yeah, they also have to travel to Northwestern, and Northwestern's usually a pretty solid program. You know, the thing about Duke is, I don't think they were that great last year, just watching them in a couple of games. You know, they returned five starters on each side of the ball. Their skill guys have never really impressed me. They've always really just kind of been guys, you know, even outside of maybe, the really good wide receiver they had a year, two or three years ago. Other than that, I mean, it's always been guys that have been there, have been solid, can make plays. You know, I think Duke kind of caught the Coastal at the perfect time for the great years they had. I don't think we're going to see, one win, two win Duke like we used to in the past, but I don't see Duke. I think maybe 6-6, 7-5 is the best season they can hope for. I don't see them making a bowl game, really. I just don't see enough wins on the table. And the talent, to me, just isn't there on both sides of the ball. You know, Cutcliffe's done a good job of trying to build that program. He's done a great job. And, I think this is just going to be a rough year for them as he still keeps to work to do that.
Yeah, I picked 6-6, but in my heart I was thinking 5-7. But again, I want to be optimistic. They do play a lot of easy teams throughout the year, but gosh, you look at some of these games and you're just like, I don't feel good with how much they've lost going into those matchups. So sorry, any Duke fans out there. Maybe just wait for basketball season. That's what Syracuse is going to be doing. Don't worry,
Sam. Looking at the schedule, I mean, I only see four games that you could really – I mean, they're going to beat NC Central. I think they're going to beat Wake Forest, and I think they're going to beat Army. I mean, the rest of them, like I said, because you're in the Coastal, they're all really toss-up games.
Yeah. So what you're telling them is to tank for a draft pick. I can agree with that. All right, so the last team, and probably the last team in the Coastal, too. I mean, no offense, Virginia, we're all thinking it. So they hired Bronco Mendenhall, and I think he will turn this program around eventually, but that is eventually is not this year. I'm just going to go ahead and give my stats because I don't think it needs a lot of talking about. I think they go 3-9. They're sure as hell not going to win at Oregon. I wonder if they're going to win at UConn. It's kind of a weird thing to say, but yeah, that's a question mark in my mind. At Wake is even a question. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the thing about it is, Mike London recruited well at Virginia. He brought in some good talent, Quinn Blanding, Taquan Mazzell, some really pretty highly rated good players that have had great individual seasons and talent, but they've just never really been able to put it together. I still think they have numerous quarterback issues. I think Matt Johns is going to be the starter, and he's the one that didn't really impress that good. I think Mendenhall is a great hire. I think he did a great job at BYU. I'm going to be interested to see what they do on offense as opposed to what they did at BYU, because BYU is a very up-tempo, very option-heavy type offense, but I think a lot of that had to do with Taysom Hill, so it'll be interesting to see what he does with Matt Johns if they shift to more of maybe a gun spread or some of that other type of offense. Like I said, I'm with you. 3-9, 4-8, I don't see a lot of wins on the schedule. I just think you've got to, I don't know, Virginia's just a weird, because you would have thought London, with the level he recruited at, would have had a lot more success, but he just didn't seem to be able to put it together. So you hope maybe Mendenhall can, if not keep that level of recruiting going, at least try to build something and have some positive results that are not just on signing day.
Or my personal hope that he and Justin Fuente will get their teams into another fight out on the field as the last game of the year. That would be awesome. But you saw that, what was it? It was the BYU-Memphis game 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was at the Was it the Bahama Bowl or the Miami Bowl?
Yeah, it was at Miami Stadium. My only regret is they didn't turn on that crazy statue they have in the outfield.
The home run fish or whatever it is?
Yeah. Oh, I was so disappointed. Because once the fight broke out, I was like, this would be the perfect time. Back to football. So we're going to cross over to the Atlantic. And unlike other podcasts, we're actually going to start with the top teams. So any Clemson and Florida State fans don't have to wait all day to hear what their teams are going on. So let's start with Clemson. Deshaun Watson, great player. Probably another Heisman contention year for him. At least going off of his name, he's probably just going to get thrown in there. They lose a little bit on defense. They lose two DNs, one of which is Shaq Lawson. They lose four defensive backs, one of which is Mackenzie Alexander. Those are some really talented players. So it's going to be a bit of a struggle on defense, but at the same time, Clemson has done really well at recruiting, so I don't think they're exactly going to be suffering to fill those gaps. And then also just look at their schedule. I think if you're a Clemson fan, you're looking at the schedule and you're like, we play maybe two games. You know, me as an unbiased person, I view it differently. I think they're going to struggle at Georgia Tech. I think they might struggle with Pittsburgh. But you look at a lot, I think if you're a Clemson fan, you're like, we play Auburn and we play Florida State and that's it. We can win the rest of these games easy.
And honestly, I'm not even sold on Auburn being that good.
Oh, no. I was going to say this might be because of my bias, but I think they're going to crush Auburn. So then maybe they just have to beat Florida State, which has been the narrative every year.
Yeah, you know, I think with Clemson, they're in my mind, they're still, I mean, they're the favorite to win the conference. I mean, Deshaun Watson is if not the best, one of the top two or three players in the country. I mean, the guy is unbelievable in what he's able to do with his feet, with his arm, with his eyes. I mean, he's everything that was advertised. He's everything that we expected him to be. You know, he's surrounded by weapons. They should get Mike Williams back from an injury year. You know, the wide receivers are deep. The running backs are deep. They only lose two offensive linemen. You know, the big question for them is going to be replacing a lot of those losses on defense. But we've seen that Clemson seems to do a pretty good job of reloading on the defensive side of the ball. I think Brent Venables is one of the top coordinators in the country. I think he's going to be a hot name come next January when teams are looking for head coaches.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really my thing is it's Clemson's defense is going to be the question. If they reload like they've shown in the past, I think they win the conference, and I think they're in the conversation to win the title again.
Yeah, I put them at 11-1, but honestly, that's just I gave them that one loss because they're in the ACC and weird things happen. I really think they could go undefeated quite easily.
I agree.
If you're saying they're not the favorite or they're not in title contention, then you're expecting the ACC to just be terrible and their strength of schedule to not matter.
You're a South Carolina fan. No, I mean, speaking, you know, to talk about bigger ACC schedule, that first week is really going to be a huge one. If Clemson can beat Auburn, Florida State can beat Ole Miss, you know, North Carolina could beat Georgia. I think those three are really good setups to kind of punch that narrative of the ACC being weak again. And then Virginia Tech, the second week, Virginia Tech can beat Tennessee. You know, I think, you know, the ACC can really step up in some of those SEC games. I think it'll definitely help them. You know, as we've seen the last two seasons, where the only loss in your season-ending rivalries was Tech's loss to Georgia last year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the ACC has done very well in the SEC rivalry, but again, a lot of the narrative is going to be defined by how those games turn out. Speaking of which, let's move on to Florida State. So they do play Ole Miss at Orlando. I guess I'm going to call that a home game for them. It feels like a home game. As far as FSU goes, Dalvin Cook returns. Defense looks solid. O-line's a little questionable. The biggest concern I honestly have is they still seem to have a QB competition. And that was something that hurt Alabama early last year, if you recall. So I always hesitate when I see these teams where it's like, well, we got two or three quarterbacks and we're just going to let them play and see who wins out. And I'm like, that's when you're potentially a title contender, that's a dangerous game to play.
It is. I think it's a game you can play if your early season games aren't too taxing. I think Alabama's mistake of, you know, starting Bateman against Ole Miss obviously was very quickly found out. You know, that thing is, I think if you're going to tinker, you need to tinker in the early games, and you need to have it set before you start hitting the meat of your schedule, which I kind of agree with you. That's really the big question for me on Florida State is they return a ton of offensive talent outside of, you know, a quarterback. That's really going to be the huge question of, is it Sean McGuire? Is it, you know, DeAndre Francois? Is it, the big time freshman?
Malik Henry. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really need to figure, you know, and then, you know, the defense, they only bring back six starters, but again, they're the team much like Clemson where they've recruited so well on defense that a lot of time it's just next man up talent-wise. And so, you know, I think that's really going to be your huge fight in terms of who wins the ACC is Clemson, Florida State.
Yeah. The only downside to that is that, like you said, you want to test those waters out early in the year, and they do start against Ole Miss, which will not be a pushover game. That said, I've got them going at 10-2. It's a scary thought that their two losses might be outside the conference, because that'll just give the SEC more to yaw about. But it's possible they could go 10-2, win the ACC. They'll kind of knock them out of contention, but I could easily see that happening.
Yeah, I can agree with you. I mean, you know, I think it's them and Clemson, and then it's kind of a big step down to the next level of ACC teams. You know, I think those two have recruited well enough and shown us well enough that they're in the driver's seat for the conference most times.
All right. Well, down the list we go. So these should go by pretty fast, but let's finish out the Atlantic. We got Louisville. They've got a lot of weapons on offense, but at the same time, they don't really have an O-line, so you'll see the weapons like last year struggle a lot. Lamar Jackson looked very good at quarterback. They got Brandon Radcliffe at running back, who did some amazing things. And Jamari Staples, James Quick, which is, by the way, a name I love for a wide receiver when you give him the last name Quick, and Jalen Smith. And, of course, they've been one of the top defenses every year they've been in the ACC, so I think it's a good team. The problem is they're in the division with Clemson and FSU, so you're going to see some struggles there. Their schedule isn't too bad. They've got a road game against Houston near the end of the year, so that's kind of in question, but I think their biggest issue is they got to play on the road at Clemson and they got to play Florida State. I can see them going 8-4, maybe even 9-3.
Yeah, you know, they lucked out because their crossover games are Duke and Virginia, so, you know, they're kind of playing some of the smaller bottom level teams from the coastal. Yeah, I think they're another team that they're kind of that next step on the Atlantic side. You know, they've got a lot of good talent. Petrino seems to be doing a good job recruiting there. You know, Jackson was fantastic last year as a freshman, so it's going to be interesting to see the adjustments he makes going into his second year. You know, but it's going to come down to the Clemson and Florida State game in Louisville. If they can pip the first one, which is home to Florida State the third week of the season. If they can win that game, I think that kind of throws a wrench in the Atlantic and kind of, you know, okay, maybe this Louisville team does have a shot. But then they're 2 weeks later, they're at Clemson. So that stretch right there is really going to define if they're going to be a competitor in the Atlantic or they're just going to settle for that third place in the division again like they have.
Yep. Moving on, NC State. So honestly, I don't think much of NC State. They've got a serviceable offense. Jalen McClendon at quarterback and Matthew Days at running back are returning, and they've done pretty good in the past, but this is pretty good for NC State, which is not exactly the most impressive. And we're talking about a defense that, while it returns most of its players, they also gave up 30 points a game last year. So I just don't think highly of NC State. I've got them going 4-8. Can you change my mind, Andrew?
So, NC State doesn't luck out because they have to play Notre Dame, Miami, and North Carolina, which is not going to help. And they obviously have to play Clemson, Florida State, and Louisville. You know, Dave Doran is 6-18 in the ACC in his three seasons. I don't think, and I really need to go back and look at this, but I thought I saw a stat yesterday that said they have not beaten a team that ended the season with a winning record since Doran has been there. So they've really kind of been that beat up on the bad teams, but never break through to really beat any of the talented teams. And I think Doran's seat's kind of hot. I think that NC State hiring him really expected and was hoping for a faster change than what they've gotten. You know, McClendon's going to be the question at quarterback with Brissett having been there for the past couple of years. You know, I could see him squeaking out 6-6 somewhere, you know, just because they don't really play a tough out-of-conference schedule with William & Mary, Old Dominion, and they may lose that game at East Carolina. I mean, East Carolina's been a bit of a giant killer the past couple of years. But, I mean, I don't see more than 6 wins on that schedule. I just – the talent's not there. I don't think they're recruiting as well as they want to. And, you know, like I said, I think Doran's on the bit of the hot seat.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember exactly, but I think the 4 wins I gave them were William & Mary, Old Dominion, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. But, yeah, you don't have a lot going for you. So I at 4-8, possibly worse, maybe a little better. It's the ACC. Who knows? Boston College. So
the thing –
go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
I was just going to say they were 3-9 last year, but that was mainly due to how many injuries they had on offense. Like, I think Darius Wade was their quarterback, and he got injured 3 games in. John Hillman got injured very early, and those were their 2 offensive powerhouses. Now, they also have a question at quarterback because they had Patrick Towles from Kentucky transfer in. I think I'm pronouncing his last name right. Towles. And I've seen him at Kentucky. He looked really good. So that's one of their question marks. But like I said, they got a lot returning. It just kind of depends on if they can avoid the injury bug.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about Boston College is they lived and breathed and died by their defense last year. I mean, they had one of the best statistically defenses in the nation last year. They were just so utterly abysmal on the offensive side of the ball. That, you know, I mean, they had a 14-0 loss to Florida State, a 7-9 loss to Duke, a 3-0 loss to Wake, a 14-17 loss to Louisville, a 16-19 loss to Notre Dame. I mean, they're fantastic on defense. They just had absolutely a black hole on the offensive side of the ball. And unfortunately, I don't see enough changes on offense to really, you know, it might shrink the black hole a little bit, but, you know, I think they're kind of like NC State, where, you know, 6-6 in a bowl game is a step in the right direction for them, and I don't see much beyond that. I mean, they do play UMass, Wagner, Buffalo, and Connecticut, which are all winnable games in my mind, but, I mean, they've got Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech is their 2 crossovers. That Georgia Tech game in Ireland, which is going to be an interesting one, I don't really see them winning those. And then there aren't enough games left for them to really make more than a 6-6 season.
Well, like you said, so Wagner, Buffalo, then they got Syracuse, NC State, UConn, and Wake Forest are really their games. And then they would have to have an upset. Oh, wait, and UMass. So I'm going to give them credit because I think NC State on the road will be a challenging game, but I'll say they'll win that. So I'll say they'll go 7-5. Otherwise, I would agree with you. They could probably go 6-6. I'm really backing my faith, though, in that without those injuries, their offense will be better. I don't know if it'll be significantly better, but I think it will be better, like you said, than, you know, losing 3-9 or against some of these teams. So I'm holding out hope. I think they can do well. All right, Wake and the Clawfence. So David Clawson, looking to see an improvement over a 3-9 record, which he has had for the past 2 years. I think every year he's been at Wake. Am I wrong?
Yes, he's been 3-9 the past 2 years he's been there.
Let's see, you're looking at a D that gave up 25 points a game. And honestly, I mean, they've got stuff at on offense, but every team has stuff on offense. So again, I call it a serviceable offense. The one thing that I think they've got going for them is they've done very well with padding their schedule. Because you see, they got Delaware, at Indiana, Tulane, at NC State.
Whoa. Don't sleep on Kevin Williams and the Hoosiers. That Indiana team is going to be a lot better than it has been in the past this year.
I don't think they understood that when they scheduled them, though. And I think if a lot of people look at the name, I think they're still going to say, yeah, we could maybe win that game. And then, of course, Army, Virginia. There's a lot of teams on the schedule where I don't think they're going to win, but the question comes to mind, hey, maybe we could win these games. So I'm going to say that they see improvement. Of course, seeing improvement for Wake Forest is like winning one more game. So I'm going to say they go 4-8.
You know, I think it's another team where you count your season successful if you go 6-6 and make it to a bowl game. You know, that Boston College, Syracuse, Duke, Virginia, that whole group are really kind of fighting it out for who can go 6-6. You know, you think, you know, Wake's kind of trended upwards a little bit with Clawson. You know, I mean, Wake's just a tough place to recruit to. It's a tough place to build at. You know, I believe they've gotten better every year. I think they finally got some level of stability at quarterback and on the offensive side of the ball, which they really haven't had. They've got a pretty talented tight end, but I kind of agree with you where you talk about how the rest of them on offense are just guys. And the defense, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they can do. They've had a rough time on defense. The defense was a lot better than the offense was last year. So if they can keep that and the offense gets a little bit better, you know, like I said, a successful season is a 6-6 season.
I don't even see them making that, but I think they will see improvement slowly. All right, last team, Syracuse. They've got a new coach, Dino Babers, which is, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because I it's one of my favorite names to say.
I think it's Babers.
Oh, okay, Dino Babers. We're talking about a defense that gave up 6.21 yards per play and 31 points a game last year. Granted, a lot of that defense returns. I'm not really sure what you expect out of them. So, 2-10, maybe. I mean, and their schedule isn't great either. Syracuse, just go to sleep until basketball season.
You know, I mean, Syracuse, you know, I really like Babers. I like what he's done at Eastern Illinois. I liked what he did at Bowling Green, and he's a very high tempo, spread the field out, four wide, throw the ball all over the field. You know, I'm not sure if he's really got the talent that he wants to be able to do that now at Syracuse. You know, the quarterback, Eric Dungy, is going to be interesting to see if he comes back from his concussions and is able to play again, because he wasn't a terrible quarterback for them last year when he was healthy. You know, he made some plays, he ran the ball pretty well with his feet, he threw the ball all right. If he can come back healthy and really kind of learn a lot of what Babers wants him to do, you know, they've got some winnable games. Colgate.
USF.
And you know that. Wow. Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, Louisville is probably lost. South Florida is a really good team next year. And honestly, it's my pick to win the American Conference. So that's not a good one. You know, they play Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh. And Notre Dame, I see a 3-9 or 4-8 for Syracuse. I think you give Babers some time, he might be able to build stuff, but this year is definitely not going to be that year.
Honestly, I think you're being optimistic with that, but hey, you know, no, more power to you. four and eight.
The only game on the schedule that in my mind is a guaranteed win is Colgate. There's a lot more guaranteed losses in my mind and a lot less toss-up games.
Yep. So watch the Colgate game and then return to hibernation. Well, I don't know. You're like you said, there's a lot of games that could be interesting. I want to see how the offense works, but God, this defense is just so bad. I don't see it working out for them. I'm sticking with mine, 2-10. All right, so really quick before we kick off, we've got to talk about the ACC Championship. So I said earlier the Pitt Panthers are Vegas's favorite to win the Coastal, but North Carolina is Vegas's favorite of Coastal teams to win the ACC. And, of course, in the Atlantic, their favorite is Clemson. So who do you think ends up in that matchup? Andrew, I think after our talk, it sounds like we're both thinking Clemson and UNC.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a rematch of last year's championship game. I think that Clemson, you know, the biggest game for Clemson obviously is going to be Florida State, and it's in Tallahassee, which is always a tough place to play. But other than that, I mean, I don't see any other places on their schedule where Clemson's going to slip up. I think that, you know, the talent's there. The defense is going to be the question. And if Venables can do what he's been able to do in the past, I think Clemson wins the Atlantic. The Coastal, I think it's North Carolina. I mean, my number two choice is probably Miami. But I think North Carolina just has more pieces and is further along and able to do that. And I think Clemson wins the conference again. I don't see the talent, especially on defense for North Carolina, to slow down Clemson enough to win that game.
Yeah, and that'll put them in contention for the title like we talked about. That might even give them a one seed. We'll see how that plays out as it rolls along. I really feel like they're going to end the season undefeated. Gosh, like the most challenging game they might have is Thursday night at Georgia Tech, just because for whatever reason, no matter how bad one of those teams are, we always play them really close.
You know, I want to believe in that voodoo, but I just don't see it this year. I think Clemson's too good. I think their toughest game is going to be that game at Florida State. And then they get Louisville at home. So, I mean, I think that at Florida State game is really going to be their toughest game of the season.
You don't think that South Carolina is going to pull the upset? Oh, man. You're upsetting a lot of Gamecocks right now.
I mean, I'm sorry, Gamecock Nation. I'm not even sold on you hiring Buck Champ, so I'm the wrong person to talk about that.
All right. So, last thing we wanted to talk about. All-American, potential All-Americans, potential offensive players of the year, defensive players. So Deshaun Watson and Deshaun Watson and Dalvin Cook are obviously the top names. I think Deshaun Watson, like I said earlier, probably going to be a Heisman candidate. Probably going to be the,
in my mind, he's the favorite as of right now.
I mean, I just can't think of any other big names.
Another big name that jumps out to me is Christian McCaffrey at Stanford.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. McCaffrey didn't get a lot of credit last year either.
Well, and that I think goes back to the Heisman Trophy. He's not exactly sure what kind of award it wants to be.
But anyway, as far as the ACC goes, those are my two big players. Obviously, I think you did more research on the players themselves. Who else do you think could really stand out this year?
You know, I think there's some talent on defense. Aquadeen Muhammad, the defensive end at Miami. Ewan Price, the defensive end at Pittsburgh, are two really talented big pass rushers that are going to get their names thrown around if they can have the kind of successful seasons we expect them to. You know, Jordan Whitehead, the safety slash running back slash kick returner slash cafeteria worker slash bus driver at Pittsburgh last year, had a great freshman season and really has a chance, especially if Pitt doesn't have to use him on the offensive side of the ball. I think has a chance to be a great player in the secondary. Quinn Blanding, the do-everything safety at Virginia, I think is going to be prepped for a great year. He's a big-time prospect coming in and has quietly put together some good seasons in Charlottesville for bad teams. you know, on offense, obviously Dalvin Cook's one. I think Wayne Gallman, the running back at Clemson, probably going to be a little overshadowed by Deshaun Watson, but he is a very talented running back for the Tigers. Obviously Elijah Hood at North Carolina, James Conner at Pitt if Conner comes back healthy. You know, wide receiver wise, I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah, I think there's just too much to count.
You start, you know, you've got so much talent, so much going around that, you know, the guys at Florida State, the Artavis Scott, Mike Williams, Hunter Renfrow at Clemson, Stacy Cooley at Miami, you know, Mac Hollins, Bud Howard, Ryan Switzer at North Carolina. You know, I mean, there's a lot of offensive talent in the ACC this year, especially at the wide receiver position, especially the running back position. Even really, I think, at the quarterback position with Watson, with Brad Kaya, I think Nathan Peterman at Pitt's a pretty good player. Obviously, Jackson at Louisville is a great player. You know, Justin Thomas at Georgia Tech, we've seen what he can do with a solid cast and offensive line around him. You know, it's... Yeah, I think the ACC is definitely trending in a very positive direction with a lot of talent on both sides of the ball spread across a number of teams.
I love it, man. I personally, the way I think of the ACC, I think of the running back conference. I know a lot of people will say that about the SEC, but I mean, like, you look at every single team and you're like, oh yeah, that guy's a great running back. That guy is going to make it in the pros, you know. Like I said, Elijah Hood, I couldn't think of a guy that they should have run that guy every play, in my opinion.
In the entirety of Tar Heel Nation.
It's odd because they're playing Georgia, and that's the same story over there. John Hillman at Boston College, I think, lost a lot because he got injured so early last year, but he looks like an incredible running back. And, of course, Dalvin Cook, Brandon Radcliffe at Louisville. Georgia Tech as a team, like every single one of those guys is going to be putting up ridiculous rushing yards.
Like I said, it's going to be with Marcus Marshall if he can hold on to the ball and be explosive. I think he's got the talent. We saw it especially in the really long run in the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah, but also Justin Thomas, and I guess you already brought that up. But all right, again, this is just not doing nothing but lighting my fire. I can't wait.
I'm so, so pumped and so excited and so just ready for football season. And it's just, I can't hardly contain myself.
Especially
you
since...
You know, we've got 44 days until Cal plays Hawaii.
And I got to... Australia. And I get on my flight and go over to Ireland. I can't get more hyped. Especially now that Game of Thrones is over, so I've got nothing to watch on television. It's just really sad.
Yeah, I finally got caught up on Game of Thrones now that I have internet.
Spoilers, Joffrey kills everybody.
Everyone kills everyone. But, I'm excited for the season, I think. You know, especially as a Georgia Tech fan, I don't like to get too excited because I've been let down before, but I think Tech's going to have a good chance to rebound this year and get back to, you know, at least a 6-6 or a 7-5 season.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, jackets rise up.
On the basketball team, on the other hand, is just a dumpster fire.
Anyway, thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. It was a pleasure, as always. Look forward to next week's cast. We'll be talking about the Pac-12 because Tommy is a sadist, so hopefully he'll be there.
Pac-12 got some interestingly talented teams out there.
Pac-12 is by far the most confusing conference, in my personal opinion. I think, at least with the ACC, you can say there's two teams on top. With the Pac-12, depending on how things go, there could be any one of six teams ending up in that top spot. It's a really interesting conference.
I think it's the Stanford Cardinals conference to lose.
Well, they have had the dominance on it, but we'll talk about it more next week. As always, thank you for listening. If you've got any questions or comments, please send an email to toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather@gmail.com. Andrew, thanks again for joining us.
thank you for having me.
Oh, I can't hand you a beer through the screen, so I'm sorry. All right. Have a good rest of your night. Yes, I'm going to count.